Last week, Wisconsin lawmakers got their first chance to pour through the massive spending bill that is Wisconsin's two-year state budget. During his budget address, Governor Walker touted savings from previous years in what he called the state's reform dividend, which he says is allowing him to provide large increases in state aid to schools, higher education, along with some tax cuts for property taxpayers and income taxpayers. Today, we'll speak with two state lawmakers from Western Wisconsin who will help us unpack this massive document, and we'll get their take on what they like so far in the governor's budget and what they do not. That's this hour on the West Side. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas WHWC 88.7. Menominee Eau Claire, 88.3 Menominee Eau Claire and 88.7 River Falls. Joining me in studio is Rob Summerfield. He is a freshman Republican state representative representing the 67th Assembly District. He is from Bloomer. He took over for Tom Larson, who retired last year. So, Rob Summerfield, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. And joining us by phone from her home in Alma is Kathleen Weinhout. She is a Democratic state senator who was elected to the state senate in 2006. Kathleen Weinhout, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you as well. If you've read some of the news or heard some of the news about the state budget, what do you like? What do you think needs some improvement or some tweaks? Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Also, if you've got a question or a comment for your state representative, let us know. 800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. I've got it up here, and we'll do my best to get those comments on the air. So first off, I think I'll just start with Rob Summerfield. We're still looking through this document. Mm-hmm. I saw a picture of the actual stack of papers that it entails. It's very large, but so far, what do you like about the budget proposal?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you're saying, it's quite a large document that we're just starting to go through. The big thing, you know, is the increase for K-12 education, and especially for the rural areas. Mm-hmm. Governor Walker was in Stanley Boyd a week or two ago and, you know, really laying out his proposals and really making, I think, a very good effort to realize the challenges that we have in the rural districts with education. So that, I think, was one of the biggest things I thought that was excellent in the budget. Also, you know, university spending, mm-hmm. You know, rural broadband. You know, I think there's a lot of good things that are going to come out of this budget.
And Kathleen Weinhout, you're often at odds with the governor, but just taking things at face value so far, what do you like about the governor's spending plan for the two-year state budget?
Oh, more money to schools and more money to fix roads, especially local roads, and money to the UW is all helpful. I think that digging deeper into the budget, you start to see things that maybe didn't make the headlines, and I think of governors of both political parties, they're kind of like used car salesmen. They put the good news in the headlines and they bury the bad news in the small print. So I've been spending the weekend digging through the small print to uncover what all is there or not there.
And I'm just curious, because in the past you've released your own proposal for the state's budget just as a kind of a comparison or an alternative to the governor's plan. Senator Weinhout, are you planning on doing that this time around?
Yes, you bet. I have to wait for the nonpartisan Fiscal Bureau analysis to make sure that the math adds up. So although I was beginning my work this weekend when I found little details, I can't really release it until all of the numbers are confirmed by the Fiscal Bureau, and that maybe could take a month. Mm. So getting through all the small details that are in the small print is going to take some time, and as people know when they followed us in the past, we spend months digging up small details, and also how those small details affect the people of the state, because many times governors and legislators write proposals that maybe haven't been as well thought out as they might be, and that's why we have a public process to bring people in, bring the details of the proposal out and ask people to come in hearings and in town hall meetings to talk about what they think, what their ideas are, what their concerns are. It's important for everybody to realize that this is only a proposal and it's just the beginning of a 4 or 5 month long process.
A very long process and a long document. Again, stressing to the listeners at home that we are by no means finished with the process. So this is kind of a first peek at the budget. So I asked about what things you like. Senator Vinehout, I'll start with you. You said you found some things. You're waiting on some confirmation on numbers. But what are some of the things you don't like about the governor's budget proposal?
Well, the way that the governor spends money on schools, he does put cash into schools, but he does not do it through the funding formula. He actually keeps the equalized aid at zero in the first year, and he hasn't released the limits on the school spending, what we call revenue limits, or you might think of them as caps on revenues, kind of like the baseball teams have caps on salaries. And this is critical information because it lets us know how much of the new money the schools can spend and what they can spend. And I've looked through a lot of documents this week, and I can't find those limits anywhere. So maybe they're there, and I haven't just dug them up. But the way he spends money on schools, I think, is a problem. And he certainly puts enough money into it to be able to change the formula, but he doesn't tackle that at all. He also spends a lot of new money on health, but I'm not sure that he spends money on helping people stay healthy. I don't like at all what he's doing to move the state's employees' health insurance programs into self-funded instead of the managed competition where we have plans competing against each other, which we've had since the 1980s and has really slowed the cost increase compared to other states' health plans. So I think that program is going to have bipartisan opposition. There are some little things that the governor is doing that will hurt people in western Wisconsin. I've had a number of complaints in the last few months about problems with stray voltage, and this is related to cows and farmers who have stray electricity that has a really dire effect on animals and humans. And the governor is eliminating the stray voltage program, saying that the program has mostly solved the problem, but that really isn't consistent with what I've heard from my constituents. In addition, the governor eliminates something called the Educational Approval Board, and this is the oversight of for-profit universities and colleges. And if your listeners have been paying attention to the news on this, there's been a lot of federal investigations. There was a lawsuit with the president, Donald Trump, and his university. There were a lot of people who said, I ran up a lot of debt and I didn't get very much at all for all the money I paid. Well, in Wisconsin, the Educational Approval Board oversees these for-profit universities, and the governor proposes to eliminate that, and I can't think of that proposal coming at a worse time.
And that was, I believe, attempted. Was it in the last budget, or was there a standalone bill that attempted to do that?
There was some talk in the last budget, and I, of course, as you mentioned before, all of this is a proposal. It may or may not, or may not become law, but it's definitely something people should pay attention to.
And Rob Summerfield, I'm curious to get your take on some of the things that you might not be thrilled about in the governor's budget.
I wouldn't say not thrilled about, but I think we have I've got little concerns. First one being the transportation. Mm-hmm. Just sitting through the numbers, I've been reading through that to the weekend. I'm kind of just leery or hesitant to really jump on board with this transportation until we actually see the full fiscal picture.
Sure.
When Fiscal Bureau gives us the numbers the next month to kind of really see, are we going to actually fix this problem, or is this just another 2-year
sure.
Band-Aid? So that's, I think, one of my bigger concerns with this budget is, seeing transportation. And once we get the numbers out, we can kind of see, where the governor's coming from. And if he alleviates some of my concerns and my district's concerns, I think, that could work out mm-hmm. with that. The tuition cut, the 5% across the board, I don't know if that's appropriate. I know there's talk about giving it to more financially strapped students,
sure.
you know, kind of shifting that around. So, yeah, once again, once the numbers come out, we can maybe sit back and, you know, look into that. So
yeah.
those, you know, those are two of my bigger concerns. You know, once we finally get the numbers out there to kind of sit, you know, kind of see where the governor's coming from to see, hey, if is this a smart way to do this? Or maybe we need to look at a different way to fix these issues.
And we've heard leaders in the Assembly and in the Senate saying the same things, mm-hmm. that there's some things that need to be considered. It's part of the process every time, every two-year budget. We're talking about the governor's budget proposal with two state lawmakers from Western Wisconsin. I am joined in studio by Rob Summerfield, a Republican state representative for the 67th Assembly District. He's from Bloomer. Kathleen Vinehout is on the phone with us. She is a Democratic state senator from Alma. 1-800-228-5615. So there were a lot. There's so much. Even in this very early stages of the budget discussion, there's still a lot of stuff to talk about. Self-insurance plan for the state employees, and I'm just picking at random here. And full disclosure, WPR, we are all state employees. We're part of the UW system. But the governor gave his budget address, and the same day the governor gave that address, the state insurance board voted to move towards a self-insurance model for employee health benefits. Basically, instead of the state paying insurance companies to provide coverage for medical care, the state itself would pool money and would pay directly. Outside consultants have estimated that the switch could save the state $40 million or cost as much as $100 million. In his budget address, Governor Walker said that it would save the state about $60 million. Still, more data and more details need to come out. But what's your initial impressions, Rob Summerfield?
Yeah. You know, when that first came out, there was a busy day with the budget. You know, I think mm-hmm. it was 11-0 to the vote was for insurance. I'm quite hesitant on this. I know Senator Fitzgerald is also a majority leader. There's a lot of risk involved. And, you know, I'm very hesitant to, you know, jump on board something that, you know, we're thinking we could have 40, 50 million in savings, or, you know, I read over the weekend and that we could have 100 million in loss. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a big jump, you know, the uncertainty. Mm-hmm. The other thing is a lot of businesses in the state could be hurt by this due to we have quite a few insurance companies.
Oh, sure.
And then if we eliminate them, we could have some issues with that. And, you know, and it might disrupt the market for everyone. So I think this is something we definitely need to step back and really, really look into a research to see if this is the smartest way to have insurance for state employees or, you know, is the current system, you know, adequate and going the right way.
What was interesting to me is that the state board that made the decision, you know, a lot of them are appointed by the governor and some by previous governors, but what was interesting is that they were going to vote on this earlier, but had tabled the decision. And I just found it interesting that they voted the day that the governor gave his budget proposal. Kathleen Vinehout, your thoughts on self-insurance? You already mentioned it, but what do you have reservations about the state paying directly? Minnesota does it. It seems to work for them.
Wisconsin has a long history of a progressive but market-based approach to employee health insurance. And we're talking about a significant part of the insurance market, especially in the Madison area. Over the years, what I would call provider-driven plans, and people can think of a plan like Gunderson Lutheran in La Crosse, where the hospital system, the doctors, the administrators have put together a plan themselves. And in some cases, some of these plans that are competing are nonprofit plans, so they don't even have the expense of profit to their shareholders. These plans have particularly grown in the Madison area. So we have the UW Health System, we have Dean Care, we have a number of different systems that have grown up that are based among the providers themselves, which historically has been a way to keep costs down because you don't have the back and forth between the insurance company and the provider, which really increases costs. People have heard that about 30 cents of every dollar are in the American healthcare system are related to expenses. So back in the 1980s, this idea of managed competition came about. Wisconsin was one of only four entities in the entire country that did this. One of the other ones was California, the California Public Employees and Retirees, and another, interestingly enough, was the Federal Health Insurance System for federal employees. And these plans were seen as way ahead of their time, and over the years they were able to keep the growth of health costs down. So people say, "Oh, we should cut health costs," but I think it's more accurate to say that we're keeping the growth down. We all have heard of double-digit inflation in healthcare, but if you can keep the growth down to around 5%, you can definitely save local government as well as state government money. When the governor first proposed this, the proposal came on the heels of the failure of the governor to take the entire long-term care system for the disabled, which is called IRIS and family care, and wrap that into some kind of a single plan administered by one very large insurance company. When we hear self-insurance, we might think, oh, the state is administering. Actually, there would be a private insurance company that would do the administration, and it would be a huge contract, a big boon for one single insurance company at the risk, as Representative Summerfield correctly pointed out, of all of the other insurance companies. So even the competitive, competition-minded insurance folks that really consider themselves conservative and free market are saying, wait a minute, why would you create a monopoly when you already have successfully competing plans that have driven down costs? Are healthcare costs out of control? Yes, we all agree. But we have to look at the comparison of our healthcare costs compared to others and to compare to the national average. And I think when all these details will come out, people will see that we've gotten a pretty good bargain and we've established a competitive market in ways that other states envy. We have a very competitive market, and this is one of the reasons why. So, yes, we should proceed very cautiously down this road because it could be a budget buster if the wrong decision is made.
And part of the savings that the consultants and the governor have mentioned in the self-insurance plan was to avoid some taxes. That are from the Affordable Care Act.
And since is part of the Affordable Care Act, and if and when the Affordable Care Act is repealed, presumably that savings will go away. And that is the largest single savings that is mentioned in the actuarial studies that have been done. And I have to point out, too, that the governor, the rumors in the Capitol are that the governor shopped long and hard for an actuarial company that would give him the numbers that he wanted, because the original estimates on destroying the system that we have now, the ETF, the Employee Trust Fund, has overseen since the 80s, showed that the state would suffer a severe loss.
And Robert Summerfield, with that in mind, that the Affordable Care Act is being dismantled or is promised to be dismantled, people are saying that that would cause some tumult mm-hmm. in the insurance industry mm-hmm. already. And do you think that maybe making this switch would add to that? It sounds like you might.
Yeah, and then this is why, you know, this is one of those big risk, you know, the risk reward into this. You know, going forward, I don't know if this is an appropriate way to do it. So, you know, with so much unknown on the federal level, you know, we're hearing, you know, 3 months it could be. It could be a year and a half. You know, there's just so many unknowns on the federal level that this proposal with the self-insurance might be too big of a risk for the worth.
With that, let's take our first break. We are talking with Rob Summerfield, a Republican from Bloomer who represents the 67th State Assembly District, and Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma who is a state senator for the 31st State Senate District. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We've got a caller in Eau Claire. Hang on the line. We'll get you on right after this brief break. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin-based Country Travel Discoveries, now planning spring escapes to Blue Ridge Country, Washington, D.C., and the Pella, Iowa Tulip Time Festival. More at countrytraveldiscoveries.com. Support also comes from Chilson Chrysler Dodge Jeep in Chippewa Falls, dedicated to providing information and service to select a vehicle tailored to the customer. ChilsonChryslerDodge.net. Let our family take care of your family.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for tuning us in. We're joined by state lawmakers from western Wisconsin. They are Rob Summerfield of the 67th Assembly District. He's a Republican from Bloomer. Kathleen Weinhout of the 31st State Senate District. She is a Democrat from Alma. 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about the governor's budget proposal. It's a huge document that we're all still getting our first peeks at. There will be a report out from the state's legislative fiscal bureau, which is kind of the state's calculator, really. And we're still waiting on that. So it's very early in the process, but we're talking about it. Right now we go to Paul. He's on the line from Eau Claire. Paul, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling in. Oops. I got it. No, I'm sorry, Paul. I just patched you in. So what's on your mind?
I'm sorry. Thank you for having the guests on the show. My question is, if I could get some reflection and feedback from your guests, in the 2015 biennium budget, the legislators and the governor took $100 million out of the budget that was slated for paying off the state's debt. And then in September, the governor's office announced that they'd be taking an additional $104 million out of the budget that was slated for the state's debt. That's not paying down our state's debt. And in light of all the cuts that have been made through Act 10 and tax cuts and so on, diminishing our state treasurer, what is the status of our state debt and the legislators and the governor's proposal to pay the debt off?
Kathleen Weinhout, I'm going to go to you. Any ideas on what happened with those delayed payments and the
sure.
state's debt?
Glad to talk about the debt, and I am going to be quoting from a January 3rd, 2017 memo that came from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. It's a memo that I ask for every year to keep track of the state debt. The state debt is at $13,900,195,580. That amount is about the highest it's been in history. We actually reached the very highest in 2012. The governor has been borrowing, but and as anybody who's listened to the debate over the transportation fund knows that he's been borrowing quite a lot when it comes to the transportation fund. The Secretary of Administration has also been trying to refinance debt to lower the interest rate. The piece that Paul brings up is a piece that not many people talk about, but it's important. The governor, as governors before him, have had debt payments coming due that he has not paid, and in doing so, he has increased the principal and interest in the future. And I want to explain this in a way that people can understand in their own life. So I'm going to give you a pretend situation. If I went to my banker, and farmers pay their mortgage once a year in an annual payment, usually when they get their crops in. And if I went to my banker and said I didn't want to pay my mortgage this year, my banker would kind of scoff at me and say, well, I can do that for you, but it's going to cost you more in interest and principal because we have to now refinance your mortgage and add the principal that you should have paid and the interest that you're not paying to the coming debt payment. So this is a practice that governors use usually to gain cash. And you have heard from the headlines that the governor is saying, I have a lot of money and I can spend that money. The budget is large. It's $76 billion for 2 years. It's roughly about 3% more than the budget before it, and we still don't have the bonding, which is going to add at least another billion. So when we think about him saying, yeah, I have cash, he does have some cash, but he did this over the last year to make sure that he ended the year kind of like at the bottom of the checkbook balance. He ended the year in a positive way so that he had cash going into the next years. So I hope that answers your question, Paul, and I'd sure be happy to answer any follow-up questions.
Rob Sommerfeld, are you concerned at the early looks with what this budget might contribute to the state's debt, or what are your thoughts on the governor's also, in addition to that, some of the delayed payments?
Yeah, I think the way we need to run government would be responsible. You know, borrow as small as you can. You need to have some borrowing. You know, what's the right level? Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we got elected to debate this back and forth. You know, at this current numbers, you know, having the budget, I don't think anybody's got a certain idea of exactly how much, you know, borrowing we're going to be doing. I'm looking forward to our CPA caucus that's in the assembly. We have a few accountants in the assembly that I know they're already starting to work on and, you know, give us the business, the accounting numbers. So, you know, that's what we're looking forward to, kind of see where the numbers are at. If it is a high borrowing, you know, if we are borrowing a little too much than what we think we should, I think in the assembly, you know, through joint finance, I think we should be able to hopefully fix, you know, adjust those issues.
Yep, there have already been calls, at least with regard to the transportation fund, the borrowing there. There have been some words of caution coming from leadership. I wanted to talk. We spoke a little bit about rural school funding. A quick run through. Governor Walker is proposing increasing sparsity aid payments. $20 million, those are aids that go to schools with, for example, 750-some students or less. It's a lot more complicated than that, but that's going to increase by $20 million under the governor's proposal. Also, high-cost transportation aids will increase by $10 million. Rob Sommerfeld, what does this mean for districts or for school districts in your assembly district?
Yeah, and I think also with this that aid, it may be increased to $750 to $999.
There's a new category.
New category. So, I mean, you know, sitting down looking through all these proposals, yeah. I find it great that, you know, we are investing, you know, helping the rural school districts. Is this going to be the one, oh, hey, this fixes everything? No, it doesn't.
Right.
We still have issues with declining enrollment, high property values. It's a complicated issue. But I think this is a good first step to say, hey, governor's given up proposals, you know, to help the rural districts, you know, that are struggling right now with a couple, you know, increasing some funding. Is this enough funding? I don't know. We'll be talking. I've talked to a couple school administrators right now, and they've got a couple ideas. Mm-hmm. I talked to a couple fellow legislators, and they do have some also ideas that we maybe in the assembly might be working on a couple different fixes, you know, little numbers-wise. So I think this is a good start, and we'll go from there.
Kim Cockle, who is the executive director of the Wisconsin Association for Rural Schools, I think, or the Rural Schools Alliance, excuse me. He said pretty much the same thing, that this is a good start, step in the right direction. Kathleen Vinehout, rural schools in your district abound. What do you think about the governor's proposals for sparsity aid, for the high-cost transportation aids targeted for districts that have been crying for it, is it not?
Those are things that should have happened a long time ago. I will remind folks that the second budget from the governor that the governor had was $4 billion more than his first budget. This budget, if I look back over the last four budgets, including this one, the governor's had $10 billion in new money, comparing this budget to his first. Well, actually, to Doyle's budget. So when I think about that, I think this should have happened a long time ago. Is it a great first step? Absolutely. Do we need to fix the formula first? Absolutely. What's amazing that I find in this budget is, and we don't have all the final numbers, so I can't say for sure, but looking at what I can see and add up, the governor's spending just about what the state superintendent Tony Evers proposed.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly almost $700 million. And yet, he is not fixing the formula. People have talked about fixing this formula for a long time. The reason the rural schools are suffering, as Representative Sommerfeld mentioned, is because the formula hurts the schools that have declining enrollment and high property value and low income. And yet, the proposal's been there. State Superintendent Tony Evers made a proposal to fix the formula in 2011. In 2013, he made it again. In 2015, he tweaked it and made it again. In 2017, he tweaked it and made the same proposal to fix the formula. And yet, the governor's not taking those ideas. There's almost $700 million in proposals that Tony asked for that the governor did not fund, and he came up with his own ideas. And that's what we've got to discuss. If we've got the money to fix, and finally the governor's agreed to invest in it, why don't we just fix it?
I've heard from other lawmakers that it's a tough sell because you're going to have winners and losers. Districts are going to lose money in order to get money to rural districts. That's a whole other discussion. But if the formula is broken, why doesn't it make sense then to just send new aid, this including the $509 million that Governor Walker is proposing through this special aid category? So it bypasses the formula, which rural districts say hurts them. Why isn't that a solution?
I think it's important that people realize that the program that Tony put forward holds the wealthier school districts harmless, which is a wonky way to say that the wealthy districts don't get hurt. In fact, even the wealthy districts get helped because the state superintendent in his funding changes gave a $3,000 per student floor. And this is fabulous for schools like Pepin and Alma. And it also helps the wealthier schools on the East Coast, on the suburban schools around Milwaukee. Because it means, for example, a good example is Washington Island in Door County, the farthest tip in Door County. That school district gets absolutely nothing because the value of the property is so high in Washington Island. But the people are not necessarily that wealthy, even though they're property rich. I think having a floor of $3,000 per student in every school is a good step forward. And when we looked at the numbers, when my staff and I looked at the numbers in Tony's proposal, we saw that that there was no one who suffered a loss in Tony's proposal.
Rob Summerfield, have you, first of all, do you have any reservations like Senator Vinehout says she does with this new special aid category instead of sending the additional money through the traditional funding formula? Do you think it's a good thing because it bypasses, you know, the declining enrollment issue, or do you think there are some concerns about, because we don't know the whole details about this new formula?
Yeah, I think the governor with, bypassing, traditional doing these couple aids does alleviate, which a problem you did mention is, completely fix this formula. There will be some winners and some losers. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing politically because to get the votes and anything you need to have a consensus or majority, simple majority. So that's where, messing around with the aid, this kind of helps, alleviate that problem, helps the rural issues and stuff. I don't think it's perfect by any means. And I think we're going to have some conversations that maybe if we can tweak it, the funding formula a little bit to help the rural and the declining enrollments, high property value, the poorer districts, go forward. So.
With that, let's go to the phones. We've got Jeff and Cadott. You're on the air, Jeff. Thanks for calling in.
I am?
Yeah, you were on the air. Did you mean to be on the air?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what's on your mind, sir?
This is Jeff Haring.
Okay.
And there's two things I have to ask you about this. First, I voted for you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm talking to Rob Summerfield. Got it. Okay.
Thanks, Jeff.
Did you pass it on?
Yeah, he said thank you, so.
Okay. Hey, the first thing I want to do is that transportation budget with Walker. And why is he not raising the funds for the roads?
Do you mean like the gas tax or registration fees?
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
And the other one, two questions you have to answer me. Why can't I catch fish on Marshmallow Lake?
Oh.
Two questions you have to answer me.
All right.
I think I'll answer the second one, the fish. I think you maybe need to listen to your father more. Maybe you didn't take all his advice, but but I think, Jeff, I think it's starting to come around from what they've been saying at Marsh Miller. But moving with transportation, from the get-go,
yeah.
I've been with Assembly Leader Voss that we need to have a long-term solution. And I think with this budget on transportation, after this next month of looking at the numbers, if the governor does not, you know, adequately fix it for a long-term solution, I'm hoping that we can make some changes in the assembly to keep it a long-term solution.
If I can follow up, what can you do, though, if the governor says he will veto any tax increase unless it's correspondingly there is a tax cut somewhere else?
I mean that is the position we're put in the assembly is the governor has the most powerful veto pen in the nation. So if we hopefully can work with them, you know, sit down and maybe when you come down in, you know, May, that this could be a deal breaker, that we can fix the transportation to get a budget passed. Maybe that's in, you know, one of the hands of the speaker and the leadership team. So it's all negotiation right now, but I'm hoping once we come out with the budget or once we pass the budget in July, our transportation fixes are there.
Jeff, thanks so much for the call. Kathleen Weinhout, I'm wondering, do you think we're going to see any increases in revenue with regard to the transportation once the legislature gets its hands on this budget?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of options. People think of the vehicle fees, registration fees, and the gas tax, but in the last budget, the Secretary of Transportation, who's the governor's appointee, came up with 24 different issue papers in his 600-page budget and put together a lot of different ideas that he wanted the legislature and the people of the state to think about. And the governor this year instructed the secretary to not do that, and I don't know if it's related, but the secretary resigned about a month ago. I spent a lot of time reading through those 600 pages in his budget last year, and I found that there were a lot of very thoughtful solutions that we could all agree on, or most of us. For example, I didn't know this, but I learned that the state of Wisconsin, all of us, the taxpayers, own or have significant ownership interest in over 700 miles of freight railroad. And I had no idea that the state owned railroad. And in fact, when I was reading through the budget this weekend, I found that the governor's proposing that we buy a locomotive, which I also didn't know or imagine that he wanted to buy a train. And I saw that the Secretary Gottlieb proposed a modest $10 a car fee on the freight rail railroads traveling the state-owned tracks. To me, that was a no-brainer. Instead, in the last budget, the governor proposed that he borrow over $40 million to maintain the railroad and to buy new railroad tracks. I feel like if the industry wants to use the state-owned railroad, that they ought to at least help us pay for the maintenance. And I can't imagine that this couldn't be an area where we could get agreement with Democrats, Republicans, and hopefully the governor. This is just one of 24 different ideas that Secretary Gottlieb brought up.
Let's take our final break here. We've got a caller on the line from Eau Claire. Joan, hang on tight. We're going to be right back. We're going to take a quick break and round out the discussion about the governor's biennial budget proposal with Republican Rob Sommerfeld and Democrat Kathleen Weinhout of the state legislature. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you'd like to offer a question or a comment. Also, you can post on the Westside Facebook page. If you've missed part of the program, you can also listen back or check out archives from when both of the candidates or the lawmakers were running for office, or years worth of archive programs. Go to WPR.org, look for the shows link, you'll find the West Side tab, and right there, once you click it, years worth of archive programs. This is the West Side.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, I'm Al Letson of Reveal.
Always sworn to secrecy.
What happens if they have evidence?
Can I record on the tour?
Can't do that.
I just had a few follow-up questions for you since we last spoke.
We peel back layers of real-life mysteries over the airwaves every single week on Reveal.
Tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Steep & Brew, a Wisconsin coffee roaster dedicated to delivering truly fresh, premium coffee to local grocers. Coffee roasted today is delivered within 72 hours. Steep & Brew, coffee done right. More at steepandbrew.com. Include WPR in your social mix. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for Wisconsin news, links, and photos from programs and hosts. Find all our social media links at wpr.org/community.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio stations 88.3 WHWC Menominee Eau Claire and 88.7 WRFW in River Falls. I'm joined by two state lawmakers. Kathleen Feinhout is a Democratic state senator representing the 31st Senate District. She is from Alma. Rob Sommerfeld is a Republican state representative. He took over for Tom Larson, who retired last year. Rob Sommerfeld was elected in November to the state assembly. He represents the 67th District. 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment, we're talking about the governor's biennial budget proposal. A lot of kicks at the cat, as they say, still have to be made as the legislature, the Joint Finance Committee, tweak what they would like to see the state, what direction they'd like to see the state move in the next 2 years. Let's go to the phones. Joan and Eau Claire, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Good morning. With all Walker's talk regarding this proposed budget, I'm not the least bit convinced that Walker cares about at all about schools, students, or any other citizens other than the very wealthy. I believe Walker is concerned only with his 2018 election. He's been traveling through the state, not doing the state's business, but campaigning for himself. And we citizens are paying for every bit of that. Another topic that I'm not sure if you want to touch on involves a great deal of money, and that is Walker's hiring of a private law firm to appeal our lawsuit fighting the gerrymander district lines. And I'm not sure if you want to touch on that today or not.
Okay. Well, Joan, thank you so much. Two points that have been raised, definitely. With regard to the budget, I read it in the Journal Sentinel. The article basically said that Governor Walker's spending increases for all the aid increases for public education, higher education. They basically said that this budget is Governor Walker's 2018 campaign kickoff. Kathleen Feinhout, what's your take on that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. If you read his speech, you can see the yard signs. He spent a lot of time repeating the same phrase, "We are working and winning for Wisconsin." And I could just see the commercials being written. When you think about the overview of the things that he talked about in his speech, he talked about money for the UW, he talked about schools, he talked about giving money, fixing the roads, especially local roads, which have been hurt over the years. In his piece that he's taking, his PowerPoint presentation that he's taking around the state, he shows little graphs of how he's spending the highest ever for roads, the highest ever for schools. And I want to remind folks that the budget, the $76 billion, is the highest ever budget, which isn't really a surprise because just about every budget I can see in history, the most recent one is the highest ever. So I think it's kind of silly when you go back and you look at the long-term trends, whether it's roads or local roads or local schools. The numbers show that there were dramatic decreases in the first and second and even the third years of the third budgets of the governor, at a time when he had 4% more and 3% more and 3% more in the last budget. He had a lot of new money, and he didn't buy the things people like, and now he's putting money into it because he's got to go face the voters.
Now, I'm wondering, as far as a possible challenge to Governor Walker in 2018, a lot of folks have said that Democrats are all they have with a budget like this. They'll only be able to go after the governor for what he did in the past. So that puts that at the disadvantage. And I'm also curious, Senator Feinhout, you have run for governor yourself. Are you planning on doing the same next year?
I think it's a little bit too early to answer your second question. I am definitely doing my homework, but it's going to take a lot of homework to figure out all the questions, answers to questions I have. I do think that everything here that we've seen this week in Madison suggests that the governor is going to run for re-election.
And Rob Sommerfeld, do you think that this budget was a campaign kickoff, or do you think that that's an unfair kind of accusation?
I guess we don't really know until after the budget passes and the governor will announce if he's running or not. Mm-hmm. It's politics. You know, the governor's got his ideas on what he wants to do, you know, so we'll wait to see on his run for the 2018. I think just overall this budget with him, you know, putting, you know, all this new transportation, you know, he really mentions the reform dividends, really hits on that. And I think now with the state economy turning around that this frees up more money so we can, you know, start reinvesting. You know, I wasn't around the last couple budgets, so this is a new one. So I got a kind of a fresh start, which is nice, and it's very encouraging to see what the governor makes his priorities are, what he wants to increase the spending on. So I think, you know, when you get a good budget, you need to appreciate it.
And we've talked a little bit about the proposed tuition cut. Rob Sommerfeld, mm-hmm. you mentioned that now might not be the best time for it, but why do you think the governor is offering additional funding to campuses after seeking, just in the last budget, $125 million in cuts? Is that kind of a flip-flop, or is it just something
else? I
think
the previous budget, you know, they're a little short on money, you know, looking for, you know, different ways to save. This next budget, you know, with the, I think, $400 million extra in Medicaid money, you know, revenue is projected to be, you know, actually great mm-hmm. for the next year or two, that this kind of frees up, you know, the money. And from hearing from chancellors, universities, and the business community, which I've definitely heard, you know, with UW-Stout, UW-Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley Technical Colleges, that, yeah, they survived these last cuts, but they're kind of down to bare bones. So mm-hmm. I think this is one of those where the governor thought, hey, you know, we did reduce some spending or some money to them. And now they say, hey, I think we can reinvest in them because we feel that there is a need for the workforce development, you know, and to grow Wisconsin even greater.
And one of the smaller details in the governor's proposals for the UW system includes an opt-out proposal. Basically, it would let students not have to pay segregated fees. So at UW-Eau Claire here in the city and other campuses, student fees are used to fund student government, student groups, but also they have been used to fund new buildings mm-hmm. like student centers. So do you support allowing students to opt out, or do you think that kind of takes away some of their control?
And this is where I got a couple phone calls about that. This is one of those in the proposal that you kind of want to sit back and really, really examine to what I kind of read quick overview of it, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really explain how much power the students are going to have, you know, what they can all opt out, because I don't think they can opt out of everything. This is my understanding of reading it. So I think this is something we need to look a little forward to. Talk to the chancellor, talk to the student leadership, you know, in the universities to see, you know, is this devastating, this a good idea, or is there something we need to tweak on that?
Senator Vinehald, your thoughts on the opt-out version opt-out option?
I think it could be devastating for student life and for flexibility at the campus level. We've seen a long time, and we've heard from our UWEC chancellors that they don't have the flexibility that they want, and they're tied by rules that the lawmakers are making, and they've asked for more flexibility over and over and over again, and this is just the opposite direction.
And a three-year degree program is another thing. The governor wants the campuses to create plans for 3 years bachelor's degree. The idea is that if you get out sooner, you save money on tuition. You also gain money on, you know, if you're hired into a career field that you've worked for. Senator Vinehald, your thoughts on 3 year degrees?
Well, there are some pieces of that proposal that just do not add up. As I in a former life was a university professor, I had the job that would be equivalent to the chair of the department. I was in charge of writing the accreditation plan for my department with the private accreditation organization. And what the governor's asking is that eventually, and he kind of phases this in, 60% of the academic programs in the state would be, students would be able to obtain a three-year degree from an accredited program. I don't think this is possible. Certainly, I and many other students have changed their majors as students and have had to go back to summer school to get required courses to make sure that they followed the course study required for their final major. And summer school does give us options to maybe shorten the amount of time that people are in a degree program. But so many different accreditation agencies and so little flexibility at the department level for what courses are offered and how those courses are done, I would point to nursing as a good example. There's a huge shortage of nurses in the state. All the healthcare folks tell me you got to get us more nurses, but there are requirements that the accrediting body has for so much clinical experience, and it's very important to have that clinical experience because you want to make sure that the nurse that's at your loved one's bedside is well trained and has the skills. So I think that the proposal that the governor's given is just not possible.
And we're running out of time, and I want to ask both of you before the hour is up, but property tax cuts, Governor Walker's budget proposal includes cuts to the lowest and second lowest income tax rates. It's reported that a family of four would save around, that makes around $86,000 a year, would save around $140 in those 2 years. Basically, it's a overall supposedly $600 million in reductions in overall taxes and fees. Rob Summerfield, is that a step in the right direction?
Yes. You know, as long the more and more we can do to reduce our tax burden, well, as you can see in this budget, and also investing in education, you know, and other parts of the government, I think that's a great way to run government.
Senator Vinehout, your thoughts on the proposed tax cuts to the lower brackets and overall?
This is where I want to see the math. I want to see how the governor has done this. I have a Fiscal Bureau paper that shows that the gross tax levy, so without any tax credits, is the highest it's ever been in this past year, 2015. Taxes payable in 2016. There was a 2% increase in property taxes this year. When I look at what he's proposing, all of the tax credits and all of the new spending, I don't see the math right now. So whether the arithmetic is going to allow this or not, I don't know. And we need to see the nonpartisan analysis.
Fiscal Bureau, we are waiting on you. Thank you both very much. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests for their discussion. State Senator Kathleen Vinehout is a Democrat representing the 31st Senate District. Rob Summerfield is a Republican state representative representing the 67th State Assembly District. Thank you both. Also, thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress for on-air production, Henry Lippold for producing the hour, Allison Secord for promotions, and of course, Dean Kallenbeck and Debbie Brown for keeping our ducks in a row. Next week, we'll bring on the Outdoor Guys, talk about the DNR, the Birkebeiner, and all things outside. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.